podcast. We've got Alyssa Walker. We've got Scott Frazier. Hayes is doing a tour of the Southeast.
As he always, he does that every once in a while. Just wants to go check out which states are banning abortion.
You know, he...
slow drive through.
Doing recon on the state of, what, Florida right now. Which is good, which is important work. I'm glad that we were able to loan Hayes out for that purpose. But you and I are here, and we are going to talk about some huge news. I mean, this for the state of California, this was a large week.
It was a large week.
It was a large week.
It was a large
stuffed,
week.
Stuffed to the brim with almost more than we could possibly talk about. And a big part of the reason for that is that this was the week where bills had to come out in Sacramento out of the suspense file that they can be placed or that they have to be placed in, rather, for the appropriations committees in both the Assembly and the Senate. And if they're going to move forward this year, they need to be sent to the floor, basically.
And what a name. I didn't even really know about the suspense file.
The suspense file, yes.
It's like the new Law and Order
series. I mean, it's like... It's like a really dry procedural thing, but yeah. It does have a fun sort of zhuzh to it.
It makes a good hashtag. But
the suspense
was broken when...
So we had like thousands, I think over 1,000 bills in the Assembly and hundreds of bills in the Senate that were that had to be actioned this past week. And one of, I think, the most... talked about, probably the single most talked about bill that did not move forward out of suspense was SB 50 by Scott Wiener, which is something that we've talked about at length on this program. Do you want to do a short rundown of that?
Well, it's not short, Scott. It would be a tall rundown.
Give taller, us the medium height.
I'll say, yeah, rundown. Mid-rise. Taller buildings, denser development, clustered in transit-rich or job-rich areas, merged with another bill in a Voltron-like partnership that would have also made it easier to build fourplexes across the state in places that only allowed single-family zoning before. So it would have been kind of this 1-2 punch to add a bunch of housing density by right in a lot of places.
That's exactly right. So the bill is not dead because it didn't come out of suspense, but it is basically on hold for the remainder of this year. California's legislature operates in 2-year sessions. So in order to proceed this year, it had to come out of the suspense file. It was held in the Senate by Senator Anthony Portantino, who runs the appropriations. He runs the appropriations committee for the Senate. He is a representative for like really wealthy areas. Senate District 25 is La Cañada Flint Ridge. It's all of those foothill cities, and then stretching across the San Gabriel Valley, like San Marino and Arcadia, really upscale areas. The interesting part about this is that this whole process, the appropriations, it's based on whether or not there is a budgetary fiscal impact to the legislation. If there were not, then we would not be seeing this bill basically wouldn't have even had to go through appropriations. But the amount that it had to go through for is basically like $600,000
yeah, which
in
doesn't make any
costs.
Sense. Yeah. I mean, this I think it was a huge surprise. Everybody was shocked that this happened.
After it cleared that first hurdle,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, after it had gotten out of committee, which we all thought would be, that's where SB 827 died the year before.
Right, the predecessor
and
bill.
And so I think this was a huge shock. And I was at this conference on Friday with all these, you know, housing and transportation people. And it was, you know, there was like the whispers in the crowd as you could see it going up on Twitter, people talking about it. But it just seems like, well, we'll go into more details, but it seemed like a strange situation already. Like, it seemed like, why was this, have this tiny dollar amount attached to it that had to go through appropriations? Why was it so easily, like, you know, just, it was just like, what are we calling it? Held, tabled? What are we, the word? I don't know. We're not
suspended?
Supposed to say
debt.
It's in the suspense file. But, and with very...
Basically in like cryogenic stasis.
Yeah, it's in like a deep sleep. But without, it seems like very many efforts to stop that from happening. And immediately the governor was like, oh yeah, I'm really disappointed. And I was like, but he really didn't say that much positively before this whole thing happened, right?
It was like, it's controversial. It was kind of, but he was being very cagey about whether or not he would actually sign it if it made it to him.
Yeah.
Which was interesting. But then as soon as it was tabled, again, not killed, it still is a bill. It still is has the potential to go forward in the next session, although there will be some difficulty with that. He did indicate that this is something he thinks needs to move forward. To me, his statement did sound like if SB 50 made it to him, he would sign it, which is interesting. The governor has a lot of power to influence the way legislators act on the bills that that are coming up, as Jerry Brown showed. But it was definitely like a wishy-washy sort of thing.
Yeah, it was like, and it was like the other thing that people started saying was the reason it's getting tabled to 2020 is that it's an election year and nobody is going to go to bat for this in the way that they would this year.
Right.
And it's a plot to make it slide, you know, die the slow death, I suppose, which I don't, it sounds plausible.
Like, yeah.
It doesn't sound outrageous.
Definitely sounds like it could be something that would happen. It's interesting because when you think about the momentum that SB 50 appeared to have getting past Mike McGuire's committee, who was the committee chair that killed SB 827 during the last session, it seemed like there was really this developing coalition that spanned the traditional lines of conflict between upscale areas like your Marin's and between places like Oakland that have seen widespread gentrification and whose elected leaders have been really pushing for additional housing to be built in jobs-rich places like San Francisco and Silicon Valley to ease the pressure on them. That coalition was then kind of, they had the rug pulled out from under them by this senator. You can really say this was a unilateral action.
Yes.
Anthony Portantino. So again, $600,000 in administrative costs.
I mean, I could have written them a check for that. Like, let's just, we could have crowdfunded that, right. You know, we didn't need it to get approved.
That's like, it really is just like a unilateral way to sidestep what seemed like it was growing support for SB 50, which is disappointing.
A poll was released that day that had already been taken. The news just came out the same day that said 2/3 of voters they had talked to in the state approved of SB 50, like without even any qualifications. It was just like, okay, 2/3 of the state voters wanted it.
Which is interesting too, because one of the things that we heard following this was just in the news. You posted this on Twitter. Was it Redondo Beach where the mayor was saying that they were going to oppose it?
Yeah. So the event that I was at on Friday was very interesting. I was at the city, I was emceeing the City Age conference downtown, and it had all these different panels on housing and transportation and development and things. And then the last panel of the day was the Redondo Beach mayor was on the panel. So by that time we had gotten word that about what happened to SB 50. So somebody asked him that as a question in the Q&A. And he said he believed that this had happened because of the pressure of small cities like his own to stop it. And so he had this sense, from what he was saying, there's this coalition now of these small local control now cities that are getting together to put a ballot measure up next year that will say that the nothing related to zoning or land use can be dictated by the state.
Which is interesting because you kind of wonder whether or not he's just saying that or whether or not they intend to actually do that. Somebody commented, I think in response to what you put up, that would put their relationship between the California Cities Association and the state in kind of like a weird place if they were to challenge their authority like that, because the CCA does have legislative priorities it wants the state to tackle. But also, when you think about it, if you have this poll coming out saying 66% of people in the state think that it's a good idea for SB 50 to get passed, what they're saying is, the state should be stepping in on issues of zoning, and that local control shouldn't be this paramount, untouchable thing. Yeah. So I kind of wonder, like, what would happen if that were to actually go on the ballot? It would just get pasted, it seems like.
It seems. So in the aftermath of what happened, there was a couple interesting things I thought. One, of course, everyone started tagging their city council member and being like, okay, you oppose this. Do you have a better idea? You know? And I think everybody was making a lot of jokes, but this would be a good time if they really were serious about putting more housing and more affordable housing near transit in the city of Los Angeles, which just released this Green New Deal that is, you know, supposedly our goal. This would be a great moment. And then the mayor came out and put out a statement, which was kind of not quite, you know, supporting it, SB 50, but it saying that, you know, we need to solve this problem and we need to have the state needs to tackle this issue. So it kind of was, again, he never quite endorsed it or said he was fully behind it. But after it was tabled, of course, he came out and said, we need to solve this problem. So I think what something that Senator Wiener maybe tweeted the next day was listing all the major cities in California now, all of whose mayors said, we want this to happen and we want this to happen by the end of the year. Something to happen.
It's so interesting to watch because so you did have in the Bay and like Oakland, San Jose, like in some of the cities of the Bay, which of course the housing issues there are even worse than they are in Los Angeles. Some of them came out and were strongly in support of SB 50 all along. Of course, Garcetti was not, but it's like a weird, like him and Newsom sort of wanting to have their cake and eat it too.
You mean both sides, both ways? pro both.
But yeah, so like Garcetti came out, the California Housing Crisis podcast, that they, Liam Dillon has been all over Garcetti's responses to this in the Times and on the podcast there, where he's saying, like, Garcetti, that is saying, I think that SB 50 doesn't do enough to protect affordability conditions. I don't support it, blah, blah, blah. And he was actually, like, more forceful about not supporting SB 50 than even about SB 827. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as it becomes clear that it's not moving forward this year, now he's saying, you know, even though I didn't agree with everything that was in it, it has to move forward. Like it's imperative that this bill move forward.
But he didn't really say, like, we're going to fix this at the city level. He just said the state, it's still up to the state.
He did not even make any kind of, like, gestures at, like, this is something we're going to do locally. And I think that, you know, the unanimous opposition of the city council to SB 50, which Mayor Garcetti did not sign, he declined to sign it. He doesn't, apparently, he's not on the same page with the city council members who have a lot more power where this is concerned.
Yeah.
So SB 50 has gone away. There is, I guess, some movement to try and get Senate President Pro Tem Tony Atkins to bring
save
it back.
It. Yeah, I don't know how this works. Resurrect it. And this is a perfect example of nobody knows how these things work until they get tested. So, like, I just remember the most amazing, like, moments in those, you know, first hour. There was a tweet going around of somebody, like, drawing, like, how the bill moves now through the different channels. Because even the people who cover these things, this was a very rare and, you know, unexpected thing for something that was so high profile. So, I mean, a bunch of bills didn't advance, of course, and so, you know, for various reasons. But it's just a great example of, you know, we all are learning together in public as this is happening. So we don't even know what could happen next.
Yeah, we Toni Atkins said that she was not bringing it back. She said that she believed that it was important, that basically she thinks that there is a value in allowing her committee chairs to act somewhat independently and not to stifle that. That being said, they are getting bombarded with calls about this. I was one of the people who called, full disclosure. And their office was basically just like, okay, we're registering your support. What's your zip code? You know, on to the next one. So they're getting a ton of calls from people doing that. Basically, for SB 50, the path forward is it comes back, assuming that President Atkins does not intervene on its behalf. It comes back during the January resumption of this legislative session. Then it has already passed through the committees that it's already passed through. It doesn't have to do that again in the Senate, but it would still have to go to the Assembly. as we've said, this is going to be a trickier vote to bring it to the Senate floor in 2020 than it would be in 2019. And then it would have to get through the assembly and same thing there. So it's kind of not looking good. One of the things that's interesting, though, is that you would think Portantino would not go to this kind of extent to kill this bill if it didn't have a reasonably good chance of passing in the assembly, which was also a big question mark. So I guess it just remains to be seen. One thing I do want to point out, though, is that Kerry Kavanaugh, columnist for the LA Times, she actually went through and found Senator Portantino's, like you were saying, Alyssa, like people are messaging their city council members and saying, like, what is your solution if SB 50 is not the right way forward? Senator Portantino's solution is to have special custom California license plate holders for sale that are California housing crisis awareness license plate holders. So, problem solved.
That seems like we should just do that for all problems. That seems completely viable.
No one ever thought of that before. And it's a shame that we didn't get to that earlier, because then we would all be fine now. Okay, so we got Mocha. Mocha is...
This was kind of another surprise, right?
This was a surprise.
Like, it's a week of big surprises. Well, there's been... So we've talked earlier about... it's been kind of a big year for Mocha. The architect of the building won the Pritzker Prize, which was very exciting. And there's been kind of this newfound attention being paid to the building itself, which is a new exhibit is opening there that will show like the 40-year history of the building and, you know, how its place in the city has kind of defined Bunker Hill and downtown. So it's a big year. And then we have a new director of the museum, and he's made some appointees of different curators that have been exciting. So an announcement made, they have their big annual gala. An announcement was made at their big annual gala that the museum will now be free.
Yeah, that was as a result of a $10 million gift by Carolyn Clark Powers, who is the board president at Mocha. And that they're basically saying will cover all of the revenues that they would have gotten from fairs over a 5-year period. So I think it's like well known that museum fairs don't really do that much. It's kind of like it's basically kind of like bus fares, which is something that we talk about a lot. Like there still is a need for infusions of cash elsewhere. You're not covering all the costs of running and maintaining like a world class art museum based just on people paying at the door. So
yeah. And this is interesting within the, you know, museum ecosystem. So you've got like the Broad across the street, which is free and has time tickets. There's the Marciano collection that opened and also is free, has time tickets. So Mocha will probably, they could probably do a mix of like time tickets and not time tickets, because they have, you know, pretty large facilities and probably people can just walk into the Geffen whenever, depending on the show. But it also gets kind of like it kind of points a finger at LACMA, because now the big conversation, especially in among all the debates we've had about the role of the museum in, you know, Los Angeles life and what, how you actually do serve the people that you are supposed to be serving. When is LACMA going to make itself free? And would that be a better investment, say, than spending this money on this building, this building that nobody really seems to like? So some people seem to like it, but just Brad Pitt.
I do. I do think that this is really just excellent. This is a great decision. Mocha is and has been my favorite museum in LA. LACMA, of course, is amazing. The encyclopedic collection that it has is fantastic and fun to like go really immerse yourself in. But Mocha's programming to me has always been so much more relatable and seems to have like so much more interest in like the human experience of being in the museum than other like contemporary modern art museums that I've been in. It feels very democratic in this way. So moving to a totally free entrance seems like the right thing to do.
Yes.
Plus it's right across from the Broad, which I mean, people are still lining up daily just to get into.
The case for this Grand Avenue, you know, closing Grand Avenue to cars, but making it more of this hub for the city and really connecting it in a better way than it is now. You know, you're still kind of like this one crosswalk is what you have to kind of run across between those two places. But once the new building goes up on the corner where they took out that parking garage, there's going to be, a ways out, but there's going to be this real hub on Bunker Hill, and it's good that it should be available to the public. So
that's and great. Accessible by Regional Connector.
Accessible by the Regional Connector in
2022. Definitely before the Olympics.
2022.
speaking of Metro, we have is it an update? What Garcetti is in the news for not great reasons, where the promise to have a pilot bus lane by the end of the year is concerned. I mean, this is something that is not a particularly auspicious goal to start with, having a pilot bus lane by the end of 2019, something that Metro has said that it is going to do. It doesn't sound big, it doesn't sound impressive, and yet still we're in a place where Metro is kind of like easing away from that goal, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, can the mayor's office really say they are going to do this, because it's not really theirs to do? I guess somebody needs to approve it on Metro's board, or some study, I guess, needs to, although we don't need to study it. Like, we know the truth. Giving a lane to buses would make the buses go faster, I think.
Well, okay. So here's what happened. So Metro is saying they will have a pilot bus lane on either Van Nuys or Olympic, or there are like four options. Like four.
Well, they first released a list of criteria, and they're like, these are the only places that we can have bus only lanes for these reasons, which were not very good reasons.
They were bad reasons.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, just make it. Like, we don't really need to worry about these
criteria
things.
Criteria were like that they have at least three lanes for cars in a single direction during peak hours. So for that reason, you can't have a bus. You wouldn't, under this set of criteria, have a bus lane on, say, Santa Monica Boulevard, where the buses are slower than anywhere else in the county. Because Santa Monica only has two lanes on certain parts and a parking lane.
It's right. Like, they keep their parking, and some other lanes, like some other streets like Olympic, they say you can't park there during peak hours. So that could become a bus lane. But that's not a very good, I feel like that's not, these aren't very good reasons to like whittle it down to, oh, we can only have these four options. So that was kind of ridiculous to begin with, to have this, you know, I don't know, this American Idol style like competition
which road is the most beautiful. So the list is Van Nuys Boulevard, Florence Avenue, Olympic Boulevard, and King Boulevard. Those are the ones that they narrowed it down to. But okay, so here's the news from this week is first, Van Nuys Boulevard was removed from contention because they're is a light rail line that is supposed to be built there, again, prior to the Olympics. And there was some consternation among representatives for the Valley that if they start putting in bus-only lanes, then potentially it would make Valley residents think that they weren't actually going to get the light rail line.
Right. Councilmember Nuria Martinez put out a letter just being like, you're screwing us, you know, for our light rail chances. Which is a valid concern, but no reason we shouldn't test it, I don't think. But okay, so that one's out.
That one's crossed out.
Knocked out.
And then to add to that, we had Mayor Garcetti saying that bus lanes are only slightly less controversial than congestion pricing, which famously he declined to say he was a supporter of when all of Metro has been kind of moving in that general direction. And the decision that was set to be made by the Metro Board this month about which of these streets was going to end up with the pilot bus lane got axed from Metro's agenda with no
notice. Gone.
Suddenly taken off, I believe on the day of.
Yeah,
it was withdrawn.
Just gone. And so first of all, I think saying something controversial, I have this theory now. You say something is controversial, like publicly.
Right.
I mean, this is not like my new, like, I didn't just like dream this up, but like, I've noticed this pattern. You say something is controversial. So when you can say like, oh, well, that's why it didn't work, or you don't want to take the blame for something. You just want to put it out there and also say it's controversial at the same time. But as many people have pointed out, bus lanes are not really controversial.
Right.
The only reason we have problems with the ones that we have is because of cities that are on these routes that don't have to get with the program, you know, of this, these buses moving through this. So Beverly Hills, for example, then when you take like the Wilshire bus, the 720, it stops in Beverly Hills and then picks back up later. So I don't know if that's necessarily a controversial, I don't think it's anywhere near as controversial as congestion pricing, but if you put it out there by saying it's controversial, then you're going to like, you're setting yourself up for, I think, an easy way to back out of it later, right? I mean, it's
that's
the framing.
That, and that is especially true with our current mayor, is that the setup for, and I think that's like, this was, it was framed as a joke, and it was the kind of thing that I think coming from somebody else, you might have said is just like a throwaway line, but it's kind of like for Garcetti, part of a clear pattern of setting something up as, well, if it's controversial, then I have a built-in excuse for like doing a complete about face and then like not doing it.
It reminds me of, I believe in road diets in places that want them.
Exactly.
Because it's like, well, if they don't want them.
The explicit comparison that he makes is to congestion pricing. And it was like, okay, so the setup for congestion pricing was Phil Washington, CEO at Metro, working under the board of directors, said congestion pricing is what we need to do. He set out this ambitious plan for like using revenues from congestion pricing to make transit free for everybody.
Free transit to go to free museums. What a great world we could live in.
And then after that, Garcetti said that he was not a supporter. He's not like philosophically on board with congestion pricing necessarily, but that if there was going to be a conversation, that he would look forward to starting that conversation. It's like, you didn't start the conversation. Somebody else did. And it's your job to do something, like you act on it.
Maybe he could mediate the conversation.
So the comparison to congestion pricing is a little troubling. We should also say there was a great op-ed.
I was just about to bring that up.
Yeah. No, please.
Mehmet Berker wrote this really great op-ed in the LA Times that was just like, take care of your bus riders now. Why do we continue to study things like all-door boarding? For me personally, it's things like stroller policy. It's all these things where we are spending, you know, years in some cases, especially with a dedicated bus lane, which they could do a pop-up bus lane tomorrow on some street in LA and it would be fine. Yep. It would be great. And instead of like continuously studying these things and trying to improve things for years in the future, there's a lot of things that you could do to not only make the ride better for people who are passengers who are, you know, have to take it, but keep people on the buses and make sure that they're not switching to driving or having a bad experience.
It's really wild when you think about the fact that the all-door boarding, Metro has done like three or four different pilots so far, and they're still doing the most piecemeal incremental expansion of this known benefit that is very obvious, improves the riding experience, makes buses faster, makes it easier for them to stay on time. And Metro is just completely dragging their feet on it. And then again, with bus lanes, it's like we're piloting it, but not because we don't know whether or not bus lanes improve the riding experience, but because our politicians can't actually publicly commit to the fact that improving the riding experience is something that they should be prioritizing. Like, they're like, is that something that really matters to us? I'm not sure. Maybe it's not worth the blowback. So we're just going to say it's a pilot so we can pull it out in the middle of the night if need be. That's really where we're at. And God, it is just a shame. I think if you haven't already, though, you should read Mehmet's op-ed, because it is extremely well written from the perspective of somebody who is, I think, understandably frustrated with riding Metro every day. Let's turn to our favorite law enforcement official, Alex Villanueva.
Oh, what's he up to?
It's been an interesting couple weeks for Alex Villanueva, who has, of course, been under for months now a lot of scrutiny about his decisions to bring back various deputies with troubled histories, with even evidence of committing horrific crimes against their live-in partners, for example, to use the most notable example of Carl Mondoyan, who we've talked about at length. But in the past couple of weeks, Villanueva has been asked a number of times whether or not he is concerned about both the challenges from the Board of Supervisors and with his relationship with the contract cities in LA County. There are 42 contract cities in the county that are contracting with the Sheriff's Department for all of their law enforcement services. That's in addition to the unincorporated parts of the county that the Sheriff's Department also is chartered to serve under the county charter. But Villanueva has been really aggressively defending his decision to rehire some of these people. The LA Times, Matt Stiles at the LA Times, interviewed Villanueva and asked him whether or not contract cities were concerned about the liability that could be potentially incurred if a Mondayan or one of the other reinstated deputies goes on to be sued for their conduct.
Right, because they wouldn't even know if, you know, someone was assigned to their city's beat, right?
At
that, like, and then all of a sudden somebody makes another misstep, because you might if you, you know, got kicked off once before.
For sure. And these are people who have like a range of like past behaviors that are strongly suggestive of the fact that you probably shouldn't be putting a badge and gun back in their hands. I mean, basically, it's the kind of situation where, given the policing environment that we have in LA County, given the issues that the Sheriff's Department has had regarding, like, let's say, deputy cliques, for example, of which Mondayan was known to be a member of one, why would you want your law enforcement officials to be anything less than above suspicion, right? Like, why would you want them to be exhibiting behavior that could mean that they're going to go out and do something that your department can't defend, especially when you're like Villanueva is like basically going all out to defend these people. So Matt Stiles of the LA Times asked Villanueva, are any of the contract cities indicating to you that they're concerned about this? And Villanueva's response was, they couldn't care less. The mayors of the contract cities, they're excited that we're actually turning over the process of picking who their station commanders are, their chiefs of police. We're breaking down a lot of barriers. We're using a collaborative process that reflects the will of the community. So that was Villanueva's exact quote. And do you want to guess what the contract cities had to say about that?
I mean, I like, he's just basically like, they really enjoy not having any decision at all, not having a choice about what we tell them.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's what they want.
It turns out that the contract cities are not thrilled about Villanueva's choice.
And which cities are, I mean, it's kind of interesting when you, unless you know, like who has their own police, we talked about this before, mm-hmm. like who has their own police forces and who contracts with the county. And then, for example, it's also like, Metro, for example, has, you know, it's different institutions, and you know, it's not just these cities, but these cities are places, it's a whole range of different cities too. It's like,
it's a lot of cities. I mean, yeah. So 42 cities, we're talking about nearly half of the cities in the counties contract with the Sheriff's Department. We're talking about Rolling Hills Estates, Calabasas, West Hollywood, Cerritos, Lakewood, like small cities that, I mean, part of the reason to even become a contract city in the first place, a big part of it is that you, as a municipal entity taxing your own residents and people coming into the city, couldn't afford the cost of specifically right. law enforcement. If you look at like Los Angeles City, we spend something like 50% of our general fund budget on policing. So for a lot of these smaller cities, they just couldn't bear the cost. So a lot of the like La Cañada, Flint Ridge, Bellflower, like a lot of these smaller cities scattered all throughout the county are and have been for decades contracting with the Sheriff's Department. So their response was really funny because
they all got together and formulated a response.
The California Contract Cities Association, which is something that has been around for like 60 some odd years at this point, started in the 50s, basically to leverage their joint concerns, both in Sacramento and locally, to get favorable terms for policing and things like that locally. So they, as the Contract Cities Association, did get together and basically responded and were like, we see that you've been saying that we don't care what you do.
They couldn't care less.
And we really want to make sure that you are not getting anything twisted here, basically. They actually go through and list a number of stories that either Matt Stiles or Stiles and Maya Lau did together in the LA Times. And their essential point is there is a liability concern for the cities. If it so happens that somebody who was reinstated after known misconduct that had possibly resulted in a previous settlement, if that person is out on a beat, out doing police work, and again behaves in a way that their history suggests that they very well might, then the liability will be even larger. Liability payouts are something that is like a pool that every city that contracts with the sheriff's department has to pay into. So the assertion by Villanueva that cities are not going to care if he suddenly starts lowering the standard for deputy conduct is something that they are like very firmly rebutting. They actually use the exact quote, they pull the exact quote that I cited at the top. They say, while we realize quotes are sometimes taken out of context or not completely accurate, any representation that mayors, council members, or city managers couldn't care less is inaccurate and highly troubling. So Villanueva, again, kind of just manages to make an unforced error and put his foot in his mouth. This is like in the same interview where he's talking to LA Times. He also said that the Board of Supervisors was confused about the role of an elected sheriff. So
Board of Supervisors couldn't care less about the role.
Oh my God. What else do we have? LA tourism. It is a yet another banner year for LA tourism. We hit our all-time high for people visiting, and I think the amount of money that they were spending in LA County during 2018, this comes from the Tourism Board. They do it every year. I think for like the past like 8 years, it's we've just been hitting new
I feel
highs
like this,
every year.
I had to double check the date on the like release because it was like almost identical to the release from last year, except the number was slightly different. But every year they beat the record. And there was a goal, I guess. So the goal, this was interesting to me that we had set a goal to have 50 million visitors come here by 2020, I guess. And we had hit that goal in 2018. So people are coming here, a lot of them.
What do you make of this? Because like this was something that I know, I think there was like concern after Trump was elected. I know like Garcetti, but not just right. Garcetti, like,
remember that campaign? It was like everyone is welcome or something like that. And it had like the Father John Misty song and it had like it had like images from like the Hollywood sign, except we closed the trail to get to the Hollywood sign and like all the neighbors don't want anyone to go to the Hollywood sign. Anyway, those good times.
So that was there was a lot of concern, I think, among cities across the country that after Donald Trump was elected president, that there was going to be a like significant drop off in people coming to visit here, what with the like the blatantly obvious racist and xenophobic rhetoric coming from the federal government. It might make people
stop anyone. Yeah, it didn't.
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, so
maybe certain groups didn't want to come here, but it's
the Muslim ban is still in effect. So like there are specific countries where people can't even come here from.
Yeah, that's not reported in this, you know, Tourism Board article, but it did say that the number one country as far as visitors is Mexico. I thought it would be China, and China was second, but Mexico visitors was number one.
And that was like back up, right? That was something that had gone down a bit, and now it's back up. And so tourism is at its highest level ever. LAX again had its highest. Like these are the numbers I think that the mayor talks about every year. It's like tourism, LAX passengers and homelessness. And we still are waiting on the numbers from the big homelessness count. But I think,
unfortunately, those, I think, hit our 2020 negative goal as well, too. I think homelessness has gone up, even though they said there was a small dip last year. And I believe, I don't know if it was directly attributable to the mayor's office, but they said, like, be prepared. It's going to be a double digit increase.
Right.
But we don't have the numbers.
They're not out yet, but they're due by the end of May.
Yeah.
And they've started coming in from other places around the state.
Yeah.
And the numbers are not looking
very
good.
Bad. Yeah.
It will be interesting to see where we measure up compared to other places in the state. LA, because we're so big, we do it every year. Most other counties only do it every other year.
Mm-hmm.
So that is something to keep in mind, but it's tourism up, LAX passengers.
It just doesn't make sense.
Homelessness, it doesn't, way up.
Yeah, it's all. And I was also on KCRW this week talking about LAX, and you know the we've broken ground on this people mover, and we're doing all we can in advance of the Olympics or whatever to make it better to get into LAX. Although the people mover isn't really going to help the situation very much, because you're just going to get to the Crenshaw line, which is not going to be a super high ridership line and not going to be very easy to get to from many parts of the city.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is the thing about if we're having 50 million people come here per year, and probably more and more and more as we get to the Olympics, I want to make sure that those people are getting here and not renting cars. And it seems like the people mover is being created for the sole purpose of building this like rental car Disneyland outside of LAX that you can ride to on this train. And then, are people in like 2 and 3 years even going to be renting cars anymore? Is that going to be a thing? Like, and what,
that
why are we even, why don't we like think of how we can make the visitor experience the most sustainable it could possibly be as far as leaving an impact on the city? And well, that's across the board.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think, how would we potentially handle that differently? Because you're right. Like the people mover is going to the so-called CONRAC, the consolidated rental. What is that?
I don't know, but that's
RAC.
A great, I just think of like a, you know, like this robot, like people mover, like drops you off at the CONRAC.
It's like consolidated. I couldn't think of what the A was, but the A is just A.
Okay.
It's consolidated rent a car.
Okay.
So
I just think of like you get off and it's like CONRAC, and then you just get in your vehicle and like leave. But it's not going to be that easy.
But it is a very car centric model. Like LAX has always been cars first, cars first,
yes,
cars first.
But it seems like it's going to remain that even with this people mover investment. The horseshoe is going to remain. We think it'll
untaxed,
still just, yeah,
basically.
It'll still just have cars going around it. And I think it'll also be like, I don't think they're actually, the people mover isn't expected to shift as many of those trips away from cars. Technically,
they're talking about like 2%, basically.
When you're
talking about 87 million people going through LAX, you know, that's still a considerable number of people. But we need to do something about all those other people getting there by car.
So it's like, do we have congestion pricing around the airport, or do you if you take a car in to drop off or pick up, like, I don't know. Of course, there would be exemptions for people who had, you know, accessibility issues or whatever. But like, we really don't seem like we're trying very hard to make, you know, and not just that, but the experience better for anyone to use LAX. Who wants to go sit in traffic to drop someone off or pick someone up if that's something that they want to do? We need to try to figure out a better way. I always say the flyaway is a good solution, and we should just like double down on how we make flyaways. You know, go out into the city in different places. But I just kept looking at the people mover plans and be like, is anyone gonna rent a car in like 2025? Is that gonna be like a thing?
Yeah.
And we just built this thing.
I'm curious what you think, because we had I think a number of times in the past couple of weeks too, we've had either the mayor or there was like that weird Bloomberg article, but basically things saying LA's economy is super strong. Things are great. Tourism industry is booming.
There was another one this week that was like, LA is the most dynamic or something.
I'm curious what you think about that though, because like we are waiting, I think, with the expectation that we're about to get. I mean, if you've been out and about in LA, you basically should expect the homeless numbers are going to be really bad. And I think anybody could tell, and we're really just waiting for confirmation that we're not living up to the number of promises that we've made on resolving homelessness. Does the economy feel strong to you? Is this just like one of those things that politicians can pat themselves on the back for, but then it doesn't actually have an effect on the people who live here?
I think it makes a good case for building more hotels if that's a priority.
Which is something that they're doing, right? Like, and you know, they're like giving the lowered tax rates to any hotel that wants it, but then like our actually hard social goals that we have as a city, there's just like, what can you do?
You can't force. You can do that, but you can't really force a council district to build some subsidized housing on a city-owned parking lot.
You could, like, and this is the thing, is like, you totally could do it.
Yeah, but you could.
It wouldn't be a 15-0 vote. Right. So like, what? It just is impossible.
It's controversial.
Can't do anything that's not. Oh, that's what Garcetti means when he says controversial. Anything that's not unanimous is just going nowhere in city council. So controversy is to be avoided.
Meanwhile, everyone is welcome in Los Angeles.
Please come spend money here.
But you might not like what
but
you see.
You can't live here. And also the people that do live here are not doing so hot. But you're welcome to come visit. Last thing that we want to talk about this week. California is in trouble where weed
Just
sales.
End right there. We're trying.
California's in trouble where weed sales are concerned. So the California budget is so big that not only do we have a yearly budget, we actually do it twice a year. The governor comes out with his budget proposal in January and then does what is known as the May revise.
Another great term that I feel like
so
we
good.
But it's also like I may revise it.
The May revise comes out every May, and Gavin Newsom just came out and said that in our first year of legal weed sales, that we are expecting $223 million less than we were expecting in revenue just in January. And that's based on what has basically been sold already in local pot shops throughout the state. One of the things about Prop 64, which legalized marijuana sales, was that it made it totally permissible for local jurisdictions to say, we don't want weed sales here at all. We don't want marijuana shops in our city. And a lot of cities have chosen to go that route. So now the state is considering changing the law so that if you are a jurisdiction where people voted for Prop 64 a couple years ago, that you would not be able to ban marijuana sales. Thoughts?
That sounds, I mean, can we do that also with SB 50?
Well, that's the thing, is that there hasn't been a vote on SB 50. That could be a ballot measure that goes forward. Right. But we do have like a lot of places where people supported, like a large majority of the voters supported Prop 64. You have places like Burbank who have said they're not going to allow any pot shops in town, which basically just
means the people want the shops.
That's what they voted for.
That's really interesting. I haven't seen or heard of this being talked about before, not just about with weed, but with anything, which is a super interesting way for local control to be taken away in yet another nightmare situation for mayors of small cities.
Right. I mean, so like the LA Times, the LA Times editorial board came out and said that if the state did this, they were violating the trust of the voters because the local control aspect had been promised to them. And the LA Times ed board is big on local control. But they also say that 75% of local cities have completely banned the sale of marijuana. The state, I think, was a little bit over eager to get this extra income source.
And to get that green.
It was promised in like a million different directions. Yeah. Everybody was saying like, this is really unrealistic to say, oh, well, weed tax money is coming, so we'll use it to pay for this and this and this. But now it's coming. It's basically coming to light that we can't pay for anything with it because even though it's legal, you can't sell it anywhere. So yeah. It's like, I think the state has to step in at some level.
Well, we have our own problems locally because it's been very hard for shops to open based on our permitting process. And so they're working on that. I mean, the city knows that it's an issue. But this could be a great place where we could be a leader. I think LA at least is a couple steps ahead when it comes to actually figuring out how to make this work, even though it's kind of been not super successful so far. So.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a case where our disastrous handling of medical marijuana actually kind of put us a little bit ahead of the curve for total legalization. Because it was like we were never enforcing. God, I can't even remember what it was now, Prop D or whatever. Like whatever the one was in LA that limited the number that was never enforced.
Right.
It was like not even realistic to enforce as far as I'm aware. But yeah, like I think it makes sense to have a total prohibition lifted the way that California has lifted it. It makes sense that there are a lot of unknowns here, especially considering it still is illegal federally.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was actually, I don't know if you saw this, there was just an article in the LA Times this past week that was saying it actually is legal to bring weed.
Oh yeah, to fly with it.
On the plane.
That was super interesting because there's all these signs when you fly out of Colorado that's like, don't, like, it's like the funniest sign ever. It's like, take your weed out of your pocket. Like no flying high. But I did not know that at all. Like
it's in this gray zone where it's not legal.
But when you land,
but you won't get in trouble for it.
You won't get in trouble for it. But when you land, you need to know the rules of where you're landing or something.
Right.
Yeah.
If you're unlucky enough to get arrested as you're leaving the airport, which would be kind of strange. But basically, we're saying that the TSA doesn't care if you have weed. So they'll just refer it to local police. And then the local police will say it's legal. So you're fine. So it's like, oh, well, that is news you can use.
I mean, if you have to take weed on the plane to go somewhere.
Yeah, that's a little bit. I don't know. But apparently you can get away with it. Anyway, it's interesting that from an administrative position, it makes sense that these types of procedural questions still haven't been answered. But California is seeing the black market for marijuana sales continue basically undented by legal weed sales because the black market doesn't have taxes and it doesn't have to contend with, if you're buying weed from somebody that lives in Burbank, that you don't have competition from the government. So the state is looking to lower taxes. They're looking to make it easier to access weed sales. I don't know if we're ever going to realize these high revenue projections that we originally had, but also that
you gotta legalize mushrooms like Colorado,
like
is.
Denver, right?
Yeah, that's where the real money is.
I mean, legalize all of it. I just don't expect to have like the world's greatest windfall from it because it's apparently not gonna happen. Okay, so that is LA Podcast for this week. We are going to be back next week. We did want to say thank you so much to Heather Taylor Holm, who after our live show last week gave us a wonderful reception afterwards. If you are in Westwood, you should definitely check their space out. Because I mean, it's Westwood Village. What else?
It's like
there.
It's an amazing store run by some really thoughtful and interesting people. So check it out.
Okay, yeah, that was it. So we'll see you guys next week. Thank you. Bye. Really podcast. Really podcast gonna have.